This episode of the Mickey Miles Podcast is brought to you by MEI and Mouse Fan Travel. With 2014 right around the corner, it's time to start planning for those 2014 vacations. And be it a Disney destination or any destination, you need to call on the vacation planners at MEI and Mouse Fan Travel to help you plan your vacations and start the new year off right. So visit them at meitravel.com, mousefantravel.com, or click on their banner on our webpage, mickeymilespodcast.com.
Well, hi, this is Jeff Galloway. You are listening to Mike and Michelle on the Mickey Miles Podcast.
This is the Mickey Miles Podcast. From 5K fun runs to full marathons, this is the podcast that helps you learn everything you need to know about running Disney races. The Mickey Miles Podcast is not affiliated with, authorized, or endorsed by, or in any way officially connected with Run Disney, the Walt Disney Company, Disney Enterprises, Inc., or any of their affiliates. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles Podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean and Mike Scopa.
Welcome to episode 134 of the Mickey Miles Podcast. My name is Mike Scopa, and this is part two of our discussion with Jeff Galloway regarding the 2014 Walt Disney World Marathon Weekend. As we pick up the discussion, we have just finished talking about the 5K and 10K, and we were talking about recovery. So let's join the discussion right now.
So how are you going to handle after the 10K? Are you going to go walk around the parks and do some sightseeing after that, or are you going to stay off your feet?
Well, actually, I will be at the Run Disney.
Oh, right. You'll have to stand up all afternoon.
So I will be standing, and that is one of my challenges when I run the races, because I will have been standing for usually about 8 hours a day for 2 or 3 days before the event. And that's just nature, and I love what I do, but I will say that my legs are pretty doggone stiff during the first few miles of the races, and that's where the liberal walk breaks really will help you. I used to run 2 or 3 minutes and take a 30-second to 1 minute walk break during the half marathons, and now I use a 30-30 or run 30, walk 20, or recently, in qualifying for Boston, I ran for 30 seconds and walked for 15 seconds. And I found that the shorter increments, particularly in the beginning of a race, will allow the leg muscles to warm up a lot more effectively.
I agree, Jeff. I remember we talked about this 6 months ago, and I was always one person who I hated to do any walk. I never walked in a race because I always felt that I could never get going again, that I was just warmed up. But by doing short walk intervals, I feel like I never cool down, and I'm always sort of getting more and more into my comfort zone and warmed up. And that comes down to experience. And they say that experience is the best teacher. And I'm using that as a transition to talk about going from the 10K to the half marathon. And I'm going to ask you, are there things that the runners will experience during the 10K that will raise a flag and tell them, I need to do something tomorrow for the half marathon or I'm going to be in trouble? Is there anything that you can think of that a runner will experience in the 10K that will tell that runner that there's an adjustment that has to be made for the half marathon the next day?
Very good question. And the answer starts out by saying a lot of the problems that people experience in the next race or two are the result of situations that people simply aren't aware of in the earlier races in the schedule. So let's just take the 10K and what are the things to worry about? First of all, aches and pains. You don't want to push through an ache or a pain. You want to take an extra walk break, let it loosen up, let it adapt. And in most cases, that will be what happens. The ache or pain just either goes away or it goes down to such a low level that it's totally manageable and doesn't cause any future problem. The second item, though, is be aware of your surroundings. There are a number of people that trip in the crowded races, not just Disney races, any of the big races. And you can avoid this by just being aware at all times of your surroundings, of who's in front of you, how close you are, and really focus on where your feet need to be. In every event that I've run in that's been of a population of 10,000 or more people, I have seen instances where runners have knocked over cones or things like that, and then runners later on trip over those things. But you can avoid that by just being focused and take action there. Be aware of the weather. If it's a warm day, you want to back off. You want to slow down 20 to 30 seconds per mile slower than you normally would do, even if you were running a slow run in the 10K or the half marathon. So slow down even more, as long as you're staying ahead of that 16-minute pace that the balloon lady is going to be maintaining. And then finally, project yourself ahead mentally as to how you want to feel the next day. And if you are thinking about that, you're less likely to go out too fast. You're more likely to be aware of aches and pains and the weather situation. One other thing about the weather that just hit me, and that is that there have been a number of instances lately that I've heard via email among runners who were experienced heat problems on cold days. What happened was they put on extra layers and didn't take them off when they started to overheat. And as a result, at the end of a half marathon, in one case a marathon, they had a fairly significant heat disease issue because they just didn't peel the layers off. So anyway, those are the major things.
Speaking of heat and clothing and everything, I think I've heard somewhere along the line that you always dress as if it's 20 degrees warmer than the actual thermometer reads, because your body will warm up, you will heat up, and you have to be aware of that. And you may start off with layers, but you're absolutely right, Jeff. You know, you get 15, 20, maybe 30 minutes into your run, all of a sudden, you know, you don't realize that you have maybe too much on at that point.
A lot of newbies will come out to the races when it's, let's say it's 50 degrees. 50 degrees feels chilly at the beginning, and a lot of newbies will come out wearing thick coats and all types of layers.
Not if you're from New Hampshire, maybe Georgia.
Yeah.
And Florida, too, especially Florida, because there are a lot of Florida people. And they'll get into the race halfway, even in a 10K, and I realize that they are just way too hot. And so you see these piles of coats in the Florida races.
Yes, that's funny. That's funny. Okay, so now we're on to the half, and we're feeling really good. Our third day waking up at 2 o'clock in the morning. This is going to be on January 11th, and it's going to be at 5:30 in the morning. And so here's a question for you, Jeff. You know those that very long walk to the corrals, and there are going to be a lot of corrals this year. When you talked about trying to find a place to sit maybe pre-race, what do you do when you're standing in the corral? Do you just recommend people kind of march in place, or just stand there? What do you do when you're waiting? I know you're an A, but for those of us who have to wait a little bit longer.
Well, not necessarily. I'm assigned different corrals at different times, but bottom line, since I have been in practically every single corral that you can have at Disney, I have experienced what people experience. And, you're out there. At first, you want to focus on where you need to line up. If you are going to be challenged by the balloon lady, then you want to get out there early so that you can get as far ahead in your corral as possible. If you don't anticipate having problem with the 16-minute per mile pace, especially during the 10K and the half marathon. Don't worry about getting up front. Line up at the back of your corral. What that means is that your time officially is not going to start until you cross the chip timing field at the start. And that means that you can lag behind and let the other runners in your group sort of disperse themselves, giving you more freedom during the first portion of the race. The other advantage of lining up at the back of your corral is that there's more room in the back of the corral. You're not crowded together. Oftentimes, people are able to find a place on the curb to actually sit down. So anyway, those are general things. But finally, if you are standing up, and a lot of people, most people, are going to be standing up in the crowd, it is a good idea to move your legs at least for about 10 seconds every minute. That helps with blood flow a little, and it helps to keep your feet and legs in the movement concept.
Cool. That's a great idea. So that's another, I mean, sitting on those curbs, I think, would be great, and it's another reason to get there early. Definitely.
You know, I was also thinking, Jeff, so if I'm in the corral and I'm listening to Carissa and Rudy, and I know that there are several corrals ahead of me who are going to be released, and if I can somehow figure out when my corral will be released, and I know that it's going to be about 15 or 20 minutes prior to my corral being released, should I be ingesting a running gel, a gel at that point?
It's a very individual issue, and the bottom line is if your blood sugar level is low and you know you're feeling some of those symptoms of not having energy and so forth, then it would be a good idea to have a small blood sugar booster, but make it something that you have used before,
right,
leading up to a race. The other issue there is that if you're doing the multiple events, there's a higher likelihood that your blood sugar level might be low at the start. So there may be some new experiences that you have if you've never done a multiple event situation day by day like that. And so I would carry some extra chews or gels or gummy bears or lifesavers, whatever it is that you use to boost your blood sugar. You want to have a few more of them, and then don't be bashful about eating them if your blood sugar is a little low at the start.
Yeah, you picked up right at what my point was all along, Jeff, is that we have that extra race. We have that extra, as Michelle said, we have that extra early night, early morning, and we've talked in the past about hydration and how you never really can replenish everything you lose in a race. You can come close, but you never do. So my thought is that by day three, we're at less than 100%, and we need to do whatever we can to get up there and top it off as much as possible. So on the 5K and on the 10K mornings, we're probably not doing that, but when we get to the half, and we get to the full, which is coming up, we'll discuss that later on the show, maybe that is time, like you said, to make sure we have extra nutrition with us.
Yeah, and there's one product that actually has been shown by very good research to help with hydration after the event, not during the event, because very little can be absorbed, as you mentioned, right, Mike, but after the event, there's a product called Accelerate and another one called Endurox R4, and both of them are put out by the same company who has done this research, Pacific Health Labs. And it would help to have a bottle of that you just sort of sip on all day long, even before or after you go to the venues that you walk through.
I actually have a container of that in my refrigerator.
Okay, so now here we are. We've arrived at January 12th. It's going to be the marathon. And my question for you is, how are you going to approach this differently if it's your first marathon versus you're only doing the marathon versus doing the dopey? Is there going to be a different way to approach it?
Well, the bottom line is conservatism. It's always better when you are doing a marathon to go out slower than you're really capable of going on that day. And it's hard for a lot of people, especially first-timers, because you're going to be excited, you're going to be nervous, and without realizing it, you will be able to go to start the race at a pace that is faster than you're going to be able to maintain for the whole race. Mm-hmm. And what that means is that by the end, a lot of those muscles are going to be spent, and you're going to be struggling at the end when you don't have to if you will pace yourself adequately. So the key here is to be able to use your head and focus on the time. If you have a GPS device, you can quite easily figure out what it is that you're going to need to do even every tenth or quarter of a mile in the beginning. And it's really the first couple of miles that sets up your proper pacing. And that's the first few miles are the ones that most people go wrong on in terms of going out a little too fast. So then if you don't have a GPS, simply use your stopwatch function on your watch and time yourself mile by mile. If you don't have a watch, then you just need to take note of what the time is on the clock on the very first mile. You're not, that's not your time, obviously, because they start the clock based on the start of the first group. But you can do the math mile by mile and figure out what pace you are on, and that way you can avoid going out too fast.
That's great. Okay. Mike, do you have any questions about the marathon?
The thought that I've been, that's been running around my head over the last 3 or 4 months is the best way to approach it. And I think that you mentioned it earlier. You mentioned the word ego, Jeff, earlier in the show. And I think that anyone who is attempting to do the dopey and wants to finish upright, as you always want your clients to do, they need to check their ego at the corrals, and they need to understand that this is a very demanding physical event, and that the key and the objective, the goal, is to finish. And so I think that when you talk about making sure you don't go out too fast and let people go by, I think that that has to resonate throughout the whole week. And I'm just wondering, when you've talked to your clients about that, do you find yourself worried that a lot of runners will get caught up in the race and will tend to run a little fast? And if so, what kind of tricks, tips, mantras have you suggested to your clients to make sure that they maintain a certain pace, that they don't overdo it when they first go out?
The reality, Mike, is that almost everybody goes out a little too fast, even when they do train and listen to me and other experts in this area. And so you do the best thing you can, but there's still hope, even if you go out a little too fast on the first mile, to rein yourself in. And the way that you gain control over the ego, the best way I've found to do that, is to have the mantras that you mentioned, but also back that up with a cognitive strategy, a strategy that is based on facts, because that will mantras and then the strategy keeps you in the frontal lobe. The frontal lobe is your human brain, your executive brain that overrides the subconscious area, the ego, and those parts. So the mantras are things like, I'm going slower. I need to go slower. I will feel going slower means faster at the end. Construct some mantras that help you and mean something to you. But the emphasis is you're conscious about what you're doing. If you just run, you're going to have a great tendency to go too fast. And almost everybody who just goes with the flow ends up running too fast. A high percentage of those, however, who are very conscious during that first mile of their pace and then making adjustments, and then often saying, I need to go slower, and then they slow down on purpose. End up surprised at the first mile, even though they've kept slowing themselves down, they're still a little bit too fast. It's just the way it goes. And then finally, if you will look at my website, jeffgalloway.com, and or my mental training book, both of those have suggestions on how to set up a cognitive strategy that will allow you to stay in control mile by mile as you go through any of the races, particularly the half and then the full marathon. Again, I want to emphasize that I believe the key to either the goofy or the dopey is walking a whole lot of the half marathon on Saturday. Those who have reported in to me, and there have been thousands who have reported in to me after doing the goofy, those who mostly walked the half marathon had a really good experience the next day in the marathon.
This is great. Thank you. Hey,
are you listening, Michelle?
Yeah, I am. I have a great coach, and I have a great co-host who's going to help me get through this. I'll tell you, Jeff, listening to this, I know you're doing Boston. I'm doing Boston on a charity number, but just one marathon seems so doable.
I know.
That's interesting. So I know we've kept you for a long time, but I did want to talk about something that's very important to both Mike and I for people to know about. We know that Disney has a lot of – Run Disney events have a lot of new runners, so this is something that people may not think about. It's listed in the final race instructions, but race etiquette. And
yes.
So especially if you're doing Galloway – you know, we've talked on the show about things like maybe putting your hand up if you're about to take a walk break, staying over to one side or another. Are there other things that, you know, maybe two or three things that you would tell newbies or people running in these very, very big races? You know, there are 26,000 of your closest friends nearby, so it can get tricky. What's your advice?
Well, all of these races, particularly the half and the full, are really not races for most people. They're journeys. They're you have a lot of traveling companions instead of competitors. And so look on that as your opportunity to pull off energy, to talk to people, to have companionship along the way. Ask people where they're from, how they got interested in the events, and what is their next race. And you will find out all types of interesting things in the ensuing conversations. But in terms of the etiquette in your behaviors during the race, before taking a walk break, you want to move over to the side of the road and then signal while you're moving over to the side of the road. One of the best instruments for doing this is our Galloway Run Walk Run timer. And again, we'll have those at the Run Disney booth, but you can set them on 5 beeps at the loud beep, and then everybody around you is going to know what you're doing. And after the first couple of them, once you start doing that beeping and moving over to the side, folks realize around you that that's what you're doing. And so they will avoid you rather than run into you. It also helps during the first couple of times, as you mentioned, to wave your hand as you're moving over to the side, just to give an indication. And a lot of folks will even say in the first one, I'm walking in 5 seconds, I'm walking in 4, 3, I'm walking in 2 seconds, I'm walking now. Other issues with the etiquette relate to the water stops. One of the biggest problems in the latter stages of most of the big crowded races, and it's not just Disney races, it's every crowded race I've been in, is that once people get to the water stop, they tend to just walk in the middle of the road. Well, people are already walking on either side of the road, so it's really good idea to take your water and walk over to the side and leave the center for people who are running to be able to go through.
His name is Jeff Galloway. He is the official Run Disney consultant. Michelle, do you have any last words?
So Any last minute recommendations for safety? I mean, we talked a little bit about safety before in terms of weather and things like that. But are there any things that, especially for people running those longer races, that you would look for in terms of maybe needing to slow down or go to the medical tent or stopping, or just general recommendations for being safe out there on the course?
Two suggestions. One of them is for everyone, regardless of weather, and that's the dark during the first portion of most of the races. It's going to be dark for the first 45 minutes at least. So you really want to watch your footing and be aware of the irregularities. There are occasional some speed bumps. They're usually marked. A few of them may not be. Just be aware. Just constantly watch for obstacles, particularly when it's dark or when you are going through some narrow sections. And then the weather caution is would apply mostly for the heat. And if the temperature is above 60 degrees Fahrenheit, your core body temperature is going to rise during the event. The higher it is above 60, the more dangerous the conditions can be. The best way to adapt to that is not only to slow down, but to put a whole lot more walking as the temperature increases. The core body temperature doesn't rise in most individuals, to a dangerous situation due to walking. It's running that causes it to elevate too high. So the idea is if it's 70 degrees instead of 60, you want to walk about a third to half as much more than you were doing before. If you were doing a 30-second run and a 30-second walk, you want to do something like a 30-second run and a 45-second walk, or even better, a 20-second run and a 30-second walk. So dropping down in the amount that you are running is going to lower your core body temperature increase.
So much information, Jeff. We thank you so much for coming on and helping us and helping those who are listening to get through, which is going to be a very exciting and, may I say, historic Walt Disney World Marathon weekend coming up. So thank you very much.
Well, Barbara and I are looking forward to seeing you for over the whole weekend. It's coming up quickly now, and come on by the Run Disney booth. Love to see you.
Great. Thank you, Jeff.
We will be sure. And for those of you listening, if you would like to connect with Jeff, we encourage you to go to Jeff's site. It's jeffgalloway.com, where you can find out more about Jeff's run, walk, run method. You could also go there if you would like to get his run, walk, run timer. You can also find all his books there. And I can tell you, I'm trying to read them all, and they're just fascinating. If you're interested in e-coaching, that's the site to go to. And of course, there's also information on his retreat. So again, that's jeffgalloway.com. And we want to thank Jeff and Michelle. It looks like we're about a week away, and we're on our way to Run Disney and the Walt Disney World Marathon weekend.
Can't wait. Can't wait.
So for Jeff Galloway and for Michelle Scribner-McLean, this is Mike Scopa saying we'll see you in Orlando.
This episode of the Mickey Mouse Podcast has been brought to you by MEI and Mouse Fan Travel. And be it spring, summer, fall, or any time of the year, it's a great time to take a vacation. And no one knows how to do it better than the vacation planners at MEI and Mouse Fan Travel. So, as we jump into 2014, why not make your New Year's resolution to give the vacation planners at MEI and Mouse Fan Travel a try at helping you plan those very important 2014 vacations? Visit them at mei-travel.com, mousefantravel.com, or click on their banner at mickeymilespodcast.com.
Thanks for joining us on today's episode of the Mickey Miles Podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening. Our discussion continues on Facebook at facebook.com/Mickey Miles Podcast, where you can give us your comments and feedback on the show. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/Mickey Miles Pod. And if you have any questions for us, you can send them to questions@MickeyMilesPodcast.com. We'll try to answer them as soon as possible. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles Podcast, This is Rick Gregg saying until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the road.